Blood Money, article by Anna von Reitz, part 4. Additional issues for the International Court of Justice, April 10, 2021. What happens when indentured servitude is not enough to pay the bills of the British Empire? The answer to that question came in 1933. Slavery. This was announced by FDR in his first inaugural address, but again, in such veiled terms of art that the general populace would never recognize his use of the word consecration in its religious context, nor his invocation of a holy cause either. What he was telling us was that the Brits were selling the municipal citizens of the United States back to the Pope, a message that went over the heads of the audience then and still does today. Among those municipal citizens of the United States were all the United States corporations that had been formed from 1870 to 1930, a translation which was arranged by another bit of legalese known as the Diversity of Citizenship Clause, which redefined and expanded the meaning of U.S. citizen to include corporations. This, too, is more international fraud, because the 1870 Corporations Act was fraudulent on the face of it. All corporations formed in this country ever since have been formed in our names, but without the authority to exercise our sovereign right to charter corporations. Thus, all the corporations and corporate citizens, too, revert to our ownership. And once again, the Brits and Papists were busy buying, selling, and trading upon assets that never belonged to them, and exercising authorities never assigned to them. Via the 1933 New Deal between our two foreign federal subcontractors, the Pope, acting in his secular guise as pontiff, acquired legal title to all the U.S. corporations, as well as the living, breathing municipal citizenry. The former plantation slaves, their progeny, the federal civil servants, their dependents, and also any political asylum or welfare seekers. Legal title to people? That sounds like slavery, doesn't it? And so it is. One of the gobsmackers well hidden from rank and file Americans is that the municipal government never abolished slavery, and the territorial government enshrined slavery as a permanent part of its corporate constitution via the Bill of Attainder, which they published as the 14th Amendment. In the years leading up to this, the excuse for it was that it was just a cozy little deal between the British King and the Pope, designed to collect war reparations. After the 1930-33 round of bankruptcies, a new era of glorious collusion opened up, in which the municipal, papist, and territorial British subcontractors agreed among themselves to join forces under the Declaration of Interdependence of the governments in the United States. The municipal citizens of the United States had always been considered assets of the public charitable trust, property and chattel thereof, and this was allowed because the municipal government, acting as an independent international city-state of Washington, D.C., allowed slavery. After 1920, the Brits got in on the act, doing the same basic thing by redefining their own indentured servants, the British U.S. citizens, as dual citizens of the municipal government. The game was on. They simply entrapped all the unwary Americans, redefined everyone as a dual federal citizen, and split the take. The British courts prosecute the victims as municipal citizens, and the municipal courts prosecute them as British territorial U.S. citizens. This double-ended impersonation scheme is a crime of fraud and personation being employed on an unimaginable scale. The municipal government got the equitable title to the new slaves, and the British government got the legal title, which they handed over to Westminster for administration. The Americans, who were never told a word about any of this, sailed on unaware of all the flagrant lies being told about them and about their purportedly absent government. Via this constructive fraud and political identity theft scheme, the proper names of millions of Americans were latched upon under conditions of deceit and non-disclosure, and copyrighted by the British Crown Corporation. One of the principal parts of the scheme was to back the currency system using the labor and intellectual property of the Americans, including the fiat Federal Reserve notes. The removal of the silver and gold standards then allowed a free hand for commodity rigging, including the ability to rig the money commodities themselves. As noted in the last article, you can't commit a crime of commodity rigging if the values of all commodities are unknown for a lack of a standard. Another principal part of this fraud was to seize upon the private property and assets of the Americans under the pretense that they were municipal citizens of the United States, criminals and prizes subject to the 14th Amendment. Without our government acting to record the political status of our people, the Brits were free to presume what they liked. And so they did, liberally presuming that every American they saw was a municipal citizen of the United States and subjecting them to the foreign law of their king's equity, meaning that everything belongs to the king and the privateers he employs as hired jurists are entitled to a cut of the profits. In truth and in fact, this is a gross breach of trust, international treaty, and commercial contract. A contract from which the British principals have continued to benefit themselves and claim authority from, the actual territorial constitution, the Constitution of the United States of America. This famous agreement is the supreme law of the land, which all British sailors, including those who wear wigs, are obligated to honor, yet they have been in violation of Article 6, Article 4, and Amendment 11 with regard to their treatment of Americans for decades, and they have evaded their obligations by deliberate falsification of records, forced enrollments, unconscionable contracts, and other illegal activities on our shores. Here's an example of the viewpoint and assumptions of the British bar privateers forwarded to me this morning from a bar attorney in Tennessee. You may try to void all debts, but I have the pirate booty. And that is in estate futura in absentia abstracto, and therefore is outside the realm of reason. All currency is gold, and no fiat money accepted, as it is worthless and should be forwarded with haste to avoid the intemperate stain of the U.S. illegal tender. Your offer is now half revoked and half revived, with the revived portion transferred to the real person in being, Bill Lee, and not the false de jure person, Governor Bill Lee. This is done with all appurtenances and hereditaments there, and to belonging or in any way pertaining into the said trustee, its successors or assignees, and fee simple forever. So let's examine this piece of self-interested doggerel offered by an actual privateer engaged in his trade on our soil in contravention of treaty, Constitution, and commercial contract. Who is he privateering for? For the governor of Tennessee, but in his private capacity. The privateer has no respect for the office, that is, the person of Governor Bill Lee, but instead insists that the interest in the estate that he unto vests in Bill Lee in his private capacity as a real, that is, royal person and being, in other words, as a subject of the Queen. So, ultimately, he's a British privateer working for the Queen, and funneling the Queen's share of the illegal takings through Bill Lee, a British subject, who just happens to occupy the governor's office in Tennessee. If pushed, Mr. Bill will explain that he's, well, the territorial governor, and that the territorial government is standing in for us while we Americans are supposedly missing in action, absent, in interregnum, until now. When you can clearly see that we are all wide awake and very much present and accounted for. This whole scenario painted by the privateer makes no sense at all until you remember that the territorial U.S. Congress acting on February 2, 1871, third session, chapters 62, 63, 64, 65, claimed to be the successor of all United States corporations and the property of all said corporations. And then combine that with the information provided above concerning the inclusion of corporations as citizenry of the United States under the so-called diversity clause. Here's what happens in actual life. The British territorial thugs operating under color of law grab a clueless American off the street, press gang him on paper, then remove him to international jurisdiction, impersonate him as a corporation, and define that corporation as a municipal citizen of the United States, so that they can claim to own him as property, a slave. They made so much money doing this that in 1921 they institutionalized it, so that they started stealing our identities while we are still babies in our cribs, and applying the same roster of criminal acts to us: kidnapping, press ganging, impersonation, unlawful conversion, and enslavement. Governor Bill is a Brit subject occupying an American de jure office, just like a cuckoo bird occupying a nest that doesn't belong to him. Put simply, he's a bagman for the Queen and has no right or reason to be occupying an American public office. He's impersonating an American governor, and that is a crime under our public law. And the same pattern repeats in all the other states. The privateer member of the British bar is feeding Bill Lee the loot, minus a hefty reward commission for himself, of course, obtained from prosecuting the innocent American populace under these absurd and vicious constructive fraud schemes, and calling his boss, Bill Lee, the trustee. Trustee of what? He's the trustee of the British Territorial Foreign Citizens Trust that they created in the name of John Allen Parker, an American baby, in order to impersonate that American baby and subject him under the British law in contravention of the Constitution of the United States of America. They've been busily kidnapping, press ganging, and removing American babies from their native land and soil, with nobody being the wiser. The fraud, identity theft, and impersonation is all accomplished on paper without the victim's knowledge, participation, or knowing consent. The same little gravy train is happening in all the other states and has been since 1868. These men and women are all engaged in criminal acts in contravention of our public law and international law too. Next, let's look at the Latin phrases and claims that the privateer makes about the pirate booty. The Latin quoted by the privateer is from a commentary by Thomas Aquinas on Galatians 3:13, which is in turn describing how Christ set us free from the curse of the law by becoming accursed himself. It's a backhanded apology for acting as the devil's henchman and dealing in lies, and accusing the American victim of being a pirate, municipal citizen of the United States, while engaging in piracy himself. More generally, he, the British bar attorney operating as a privateer under color of law on our shores, is referring to durante absentia, a Latin phrase meaning during absence, and refers to the administration of an estate in the absence of an executor. And this is connected to the purported absence of our government, which has been here, defrauded and misinformed by our employees the entire time. All Americans and their estates are naturally outside the jurisdiction of the British courts, so they drag the impersonated American estate into their jurisdiction by the illegal and unlawful means described above. They then appoint one of their own court officers as an administrator durante absentia, and pillage the foreign estate in the absence of the actual lawful executor. This is the land version of salvage at sea, which is why he refers to the pirate booty. The privateer has been appointed to act as administrator durante absentia by a state of state court, and based on this authority assumed under color of law, he pretends to have the power of life and death over his American slave and ownership of all the American assets. And he does this in front of the living man who is actually his employer, a man who is owed his good faith and service, and this is done, moreover, while standing on the land and soil of this country, in violation of our constitutions, and while pretending that our government is absent. Finally, note that the privateer is attempting to solicit a bribe purportedly payable to Bill Lee via a Cash App transaction, and advocating this, even though it's worthless and not currency, to avoid the taint of US dollars. This is especially offensive and ironic, not only because of the bribery, but because the British territorial government is responsible for purloining the gold and silver belonging to Americans, and moving it all offshore to locations in the Philippines, Indonesia, and elsewhere for safekeeping, and also responsible, therefore, for denying Americans access to their own precious metals and preventing the issuance of both a commodity-backed monetary standard and a precious metals-backed currency. This is being reported to the International Court of Justice for prosecution of the rogue governments promoting this great fraud, the corporations implementing it, and for the specific investigation of William Byron Lee, also known as Bill Lee of Franklin, Tennessee, and as Governor Bill Lee, and the Madison County Court in Tennessee, which is self-evidently engaged in human trafficking, personage, barratry, and other crimes, including usurpation against the lawful government of Tennessee and the Tennessee Assembly, which is now in session. Also for prosecution of the administrators durante absentia appointed by the Madison County Court, all of whom are acting as executors de sanctor, as unlicensed privateers and undeclared foreign agents on our shores. Definition of executor de sanctor: a person who, without legal authority, assumes control of a decedent's property as if he were executor. This is only one particularly galling example of human trafficking, personage crimes and barratry, improper probate administration, probate fraud, pillaging, inland piracy, conspiracy against the constitutions of this country, evasion of contractual obligations, bad faith, fraud, racketeering under color of law, illegal mercenary activities on our soil, impersonation of American public officials, usurpation, unlawful conversion, violation of the Constitution of the United States of America, Article 6, 4, and Amendment 11, trespass upon our land and soil, armed robbery under color of law, impersonation of lawful court officials, and violation of both the Geneva and Hague Conventions. This filthy misadministration of these courts by the British Crown and by the municipal United States must be brought to an end, together with the false legal presumptions promoted by these secondary subcontractors. The principals must be held to account, and our assets must be returned to our own control without further misunderstanding or excuse. We rely upon the goodwill of the court and the international community to prevail upon the rogue interests responsible.